Well, the weekend is almost upon us here, Shannon. And
how can you tell the difference? Seriously, how can you tell the difference?
I have to look at the calendar.
Exactly.
That's the only way you can know, right?
I mean, exactly.
Friday is the same as Saturday is the same as Sunday is the same as Tuesday, week after week after week after week.
I had three Thursdays this week.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. It was first time ever.
Don't know if that's a record or not, but. And the weather is spectacular here, and yesterday was unbelievable. Snow has melted, and I think we got to 18 or 19 degrees.
Well, up in the suburbs out where I live, we were at 20.5.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Oh boy.
Shorts. I was wearing shorts yesterday, Bob.
Were you really?
I'm walking the dog, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's going to get cooler over the next little while, but you got to start thinking about the golf courses open.
Oh, I know. And that, you know what that means? The Masters is coming.
Well, the TPC is on now.
Yes.
And I watched, did you watch a chunk of that yesterday at all?
No, I was outside. I was walking my dogs.
Yeah, well, so I watched a bit of that. Sergio had a big day and has the lead. And a bunch of pretty good names hovering around, as you would expect.
I tell you what, this must be, this pandemic thing has gone really fast, because I would swear we just finished the Masters.
We did, sort of.
Oh, yeah. I know.
We're going to have another one soon.
Yeah. Next month.
Well, keep our fingers crossed. I don't see any reason why.
And next month, you used to be the start of hockey playoffs, too. But not this year.
Yes, April.
Yeah, no, but not this year.
No, this year it'll be May or June.
No, middle of May. Middle of May.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. A lot of hockey talk on this program. Darren Millard from Las Vegas, Mike Harrington from Buffalo will join us. And we'll chat a bit more when we continue after this message. With John Shannon, Bob McCown, and joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada, where it's a little chilly for an early March in Vegas. Darren Millard is here, and from Buffalo, New York, where it's about the same as it is here in Toronto, Mike Harrington of TBN Sports joins us. What's the temperature there this morning in Vegas, Millard?
It's about 52.
You see, you can tell when McCowan's getting old.
Because that's wants to talk about the weather.
Old people talk about the weather.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, but when it's 68 in Buffalo in March, we talk about the weather.
Three-year-olds talk about the weather in Buffalo.
Okay. All right, Mike, you win. You win.
I rest my case. But look, when you get to early second week of March in Vegas, having been there for so many years, you start thinking about golf, and the temperature is around 70 usually. That's about normal, 70, maybe even 75. So 52 is pretty chilly.
I walked out of the rink yesterday, and there was a squall going through, a little mini blizzard. And two people were walking across the street with me, and they said, "You're Canadian. You must love this. Why do you think I live here? To get away from this. Come on."
That's like the famous Jack Kent Cook line when he bought the Los Angeles Kings. Because at the time, they claimed there was 800,000 Canadians living in Southern California, but they all moved there.
Why did they go to L.A.?
Because they hate hockey.
That's right. Well, I'm shocked that your kids, Millard, are actually going to school, because in my history, two flakes of snow and they panicked and shut down all the schools.
Well, we're not, though, because it's distance learning. They get kind of screwed over on the old snow days, because the computers are still working. So they're not very happy about that.
A snow day in Toronto or Buffalo is significantly different from a snow day in Las Vegas. I assure you of that. Let's talk hockey pucks. One of the interesting things we saw this week is the NHL. Did they have meetings, John?
Your board of governors on Monday, yes.
Yeah. And Bettman comes out and says, and I don't know whether to find this surprising or not, that the Canadian division is a one-year wonder. And will
thank
not
goodness
be repeated.
Thank goodness,
really? You feel that?
Oh, absolutely.
Enough. Exactly.
I'm sick of hearing about it. It's all I hear about from up there. You can't even, no one even talks about the rest of the league. It's like you're in your own league, Bob. Enough.
We kind of like it that way because it's the only way we'll get a team to the Stanley Cup conference final or the semifinal, if you will. Well, okay, but you guys have all got the same thing. I mean, Vegas, you're playing all against teams in your own, whatever it is, division.
Division, yeah. It's called divisions, Bob.
Thank you. And Harrington, the Sabres are playing against the same group of seven teams.
Allegedly.
Well, they're showing up, Mike.
Well, not that anybody pays attention, but.
The games are completed.
For the most part, yeah. I don't know if anybody stays. Well, what if they weren't completed? There's an interesting thought. Would anybody notice?
Well, there have been
might be happier.
You know, there have been a couple of American Hockey League games that have been postponed after the first period this week. So,
well, I'm just thinking that, you know, the way the Sabres have played, if they just threw up their arms and waved a white flag and said, "Ah, we're going to quit midway."
There's been a lot of no mas down here. Let me tell you. That's
the point. All right. Well, let's start with. That Buffalo team, were expectations too high? Or is there something fundamentally wrong? How do you analyze the rather pathetic performance of your Sabres?
Well, you know what? There were no expectations. Most people did not pick them as a playoff team, figured they'd be sixth or seventh. They really got the raw deal in the realignment. That's about the toughest division move any team has had to go through with the division they got put in. People expected competitive hockey, loosey-goose hockey, some scoring, a lot of goals, maybe some bad goaltending. They did not expect completely feeble, non-competitive efforts. And that's what they're getting from this club right now. Underachievers all over the place. Since January 28th, they're 3-1-1 against the Devils. Okay. They're 0-11-2 against everybody else. I mean, and look what they got coming up. Another game against Pittsburgh, the Capitals, the Devils Tuesday, thank God. Two more against the Bruins. Starting last night, 16 of their last 32 against Pittsburgh and Boston. The coaching is out of whack. Kruger should have been probably gone 2 weeks ago. They got injuries all over the place. Maybe we find out today about Eichel. It's, again, a disaster.
When you say find out about Eichel, you're talking about injury, not trade.
Correct. Injury. Yeah. Injury.
You're not trading Jack Eichel, are you?
No. And the thing is, too, the injury, they might be shutting him down. He's had multiple problems all year. He has not been right all year. It's plainly obvious to anyone. And we want to hear what they sent him out of town for a second opinion on whatever ails him, because there's multiple ailments going on. We're close to finding out. And I'm not thinking we may not see him much anymore this season.
Well, I don't know whether we should dwell on this, but is there any level of optimism? I mean, I felt like there was some level of optimism at the beginning of the season that, yeah, the team might not make the playoffs, but that they were going to be scrappy and competitive, and they have not been that over the last, what, month, 2 months?
Right.
No, since January 13th, really.
Yeah, and the COVID thing really took its toll on them. They had a terrible COVID outbreak against the coach. Ristolainen probably had the worst COVID case of any player in the league. I get all that. You know, and realistically, 1 year for Taylor Hall was a good bet. See what happens. He's got two goals. Who would have picked Taylor Hall to have two goals in the middle of March?
I did not expect Colin Miller to have more goals than Taylor Hall.
Right. Yeah. Or Curtis Lazar or Riley Sheehan. I mean, you know, it's crazy. There's been so much underachieving here going on. The top players, Skinner has one goal. Eichel's had a lot of assists. He's got two goals. They just don't score. The goaltending now has fallen apart with Linus Ullmark hurt, and they're going nowhere again.
I think that's the biggest concern, really. Sorry, Darren. I think that's the biggest concern when you look at the high-end guys, the guys that are, you know, making, what, $27, $28 million, I think have five goals.
Right.
Hall, Eichel, and Skinner. And Jeff Skinner's been a healthy scratch at least three times. So,
and
I mean,
$6 million more for Kyle Okpozo. Zippo. Wow.
But that's a recurring issue. That's been how many years for that now? So,
right. I mean, one of the worst signings from that 2016 free agent disaster class.
They made one of the bigger splashes during the pandemic when they made the change at management. Can you trace any of this back to that and not having a guy that's sort of been through it before? Certainly was a part of that Stanley Cup management group in Pittsburgh. Like, did they make a mistake there?
Well, I mean, I think they thought that Jason Botterill hadn't worked out, but they reevaluated their organization when they found out the draft wasn't going in June. And basically, ownership cut. They cut. There's no president of hockey. There never has been. There's no assistant general managers now. They cut both of those. The first day on the job, I remember Brian Burke saying this, Kevin Adams had to go ruin 22 lives. And Brian Burke said, I could walk right past that job. They got rid of scouts, assistant GMs, the vice president of PR. You know, they have cut this organization to the bone. And, you know, a lot of times you get what you pay for. They pay for players. No doubt. The cap is $82 million. But they have no organization around their first-time rookie GM, Kevin Adams, and that's going to be a real problem.
And well, that's how do you get better after that, right?
I mean, we haven't seen him act at a trade deadline. We're about to find out. We're going to have to see, does Kevin Adams have to trade Jack Eichel? Holy cow. I mean, what a nightmare this potential could be this offseason. And, you know, they tanked for a year and a half. And here we are again saying they might have to blow it up and start over.
Yeah, but I wonder, guys, how much of this you think is COVID related and the fact that there is negligible revenue being generated by this team or any other team. And, you know, could the Sabres, you know, if the pandemic essentially is under control or ends by the start of next season, and there's some reason to believe that that might happen, could the Sabres go back to where they were before, start hiring a whack of people? No?
No, I don't think so, because ownership has lost so much revenue, not just in hockey. They've lost revenue in the oil business. They've lost revenue in the hotel, restaurant, hospitality business. They've made a lot of money on the Bills, but that money goes back into the Bills to a large degree, and they've got to figure out what they're going to do with their football stadium, what they're going to do with their hockey arena. So they have a lot of fundamental systemic issues here, going right from ownership all the way through this hockey organization, and you do see the results on the ice. They thought they could spend all the money on the players. It didn't work out, and now they have to figure out again who's going to be the coach of this team. So they haven't fired Ralph Kruger yet because they still owe him $6 million through next year. Any other team would have already fired Ralph Kruger.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Do you think the Pegulas have they have a shiny new toy? Actually, they have a shiny toy that's winning in the Bills because they've owned it for 5 years now. Do you think they've just lost interest in the hockey club?
To some degree, they've lost interest. They still want to win, but here's what they tried to do. They got lucky with the Bills. They found the right coach, a first-time head coach in Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott brought in Brandon Bean, and the coach kind of runs the team. That's the NFL model with the coach as the top dog. The NHL model is not that way. They tried to replicate it with Ralph Kruger and gave him way too much power and kind of brought in the GM from down the hall and Kevin Adams. It doesn't work that way in the NHL. And they're trying to use the football model and it's never going to work.
So do you think they've realized that or are they still going through that process? I mean, because you guys, I mean, I gotta commend you. I listened to Kevin's press conference last week or early this week, and you actually gave him more trouble about having press conferences than most of the Washington reporters have given Joe Biden for not having one. the one thing that I wonder is, these people, can they be told that things are wrong and will they listen?
No, I mean, 7 years ago, Pat LaFontaine told him everything he thought, and we're to the point now where they got rid of him, and he's persona non grata in the organization. They don't even speak about him. You know, he doesn't come back for any functions anymore. They don't listen to anybody. That has been their problem through much of their time here, and you see the results. And now, when you want to bring in a reputable person, maybe you have a president of hockey operations or assistant GM. Well, Kim Pegula is the president. They don't believe in the president of hockey operations model. They want to have the GM go right to the owner. And, you know, I think they've lost trust in quote-unquote outsiders because they brought in Tim Murray and Botterill, and it didn't work. And now they just don't know what to do. And
both first-time general managers, though, too.
First-time general managers. It's a big mistake. You know, first-time coaches, after they got rid of Dan Bylsma, which was a mistake, they brought in Housley. Realistic, it just didn't work. Now they bring in Kruger, hasn't been in the league in 8 years. And who's going to be the next coach? Is it going to be a college coach or, you know, an AHL coach? I mean, realistically, is Claude Julien or Bruce Boudreau or Gerard Gallant taking the Buffalo Sabres job with the state of this organization right now? Doubt it.
Well, any coach that's unemployed might take anything, but
that's right.
We get your point. Is there any talk about the Pegulas selling the franchise?
No, there was a downright fake internet rumor last week. Mm-hmm. And for as silent as the Pegulas of the organization is at times about certain things, they couldn't have stamped that one out fast enough. It was literally within 10 minutes. They said, not true, false. No non-disclosure agreements have been sent out. No minority partners being sought. No, I don't believe right now. Now, that could change a month from now, 6 months from now, whatever. We're talking today. Right now, today, there's no interest in selling the Buffalo Sabres. They want to win. I give them credit. They want to win the Stanley Cup as much as they did the day they walked in the door. They just have no idea how to do it.
Mike, I want to win the Stanley Cup. But, you know, I only got two Portuguese water dogs, you know, and a lovely wife. That's it. I want to win the Stanley Cup, too. So, I mean, I might be better qualified.
And they have a president. She's the president. Kim Pegula is the president. Okay, she can be the business president. To me, having a first-time rookie GM with no assistant general managers is inconceivable. Jason Botterill had Randy Sexton and Steve Greeley, two experienced guys. To have no one behind Kevin Adams, it's just baffling.
It's interesting with Darren on the show today. If you look at what a model startup should look like, when you think about an owner who went out and found George McPhee on the recommendation of the commissioner, yep, who had been a general manager for 17 or 18 years, George was hired, took his time, brought in somebody like Kelly McCrimmon, trained him to be a manager, and they have a front office that I think everybody in the league could brag about. Don't you, Darren?
Yeah, from a structure standpoint and an execution standpoint, absolute stability, respect, credibility from the top down. Yeah. Kelly McCrimmon came from major junior and seamlessly transitioned into the National Hockey League. And we know George McPhee's track record.
I want to skip back. We're going to get to Vegas more extensively in the next segment, but you talked earlier, Harrington, about the quality of the opposition that the Sabres are facing, and nobody denies that. Question kind of for everybody here is, who's the best team in that division?
The Sabres, it's the Islanders, since they went 0-6 against them. But it's hard. They're not there yet right now, but I still think the Boston Bruins are probably the best team in that group.
You do, huh?
I do. It will play out that way. Now, they're not the Boston Bruins they've been. We got to see, make sure Tuukka Rask holds up. Chara is not there. They don't have Torrey Krug. But, you know, the Islanders, you know, the other day, the Islanders were 6-0 against the Sabres and 9-6-4 against everybody else. So there's some doing there on their part. But I like Boston. I like Washington. You know, Pittsburgh, not as impressive. But I still think if you're going to have someone emerge, I think it's going to be Boston.
You guys agree?
I've gone through three teams this year at different times, and Washington seems to be the team that I keep coming back to. But boy, Boston, if they can ever get some secondary scoring, and it looks like they're starting to get some after some lineup changes and healthy scratches, and the New York Islanders, if he's not the best coach in the National Hockey League, he's one of the best top three, and Barry Trotz finds ways to get out of his team that nobody else can.
So Mike, you said the Islanders are 6-0 against Buffalo. They're 5-0 against the Bruins. So the 11 of their victories, and I don't have the standings in front of me, but 11 of their victories are against Boston and Buffalo. They have beaten the Bruins five consecutive times this
That's
year.
That's hard.
Do we understand, John, what that means in this era?
Only that the first two rounds of the playoffs are going to be, you know,
no, I get
bloodbaths.
It.
I mean, that's really that's it. You know, the physical nature. The one thing I would say of the four divisions, and you know, Darren's going to disagree, but I think this division, the one that the Sabres are in, is by far the most physical of the four. I think that they're playing a much tougher brand of hockey, heavy hitting hockey, the Tom Wilson style of hockey, more so than any of the other three divisions.
And that's another reason why the Sabres are a disaster, because they just don't. I mean, the Sabres are out for Sunday skates a lot of the time here.
Yeah.
They don't play physical hockey at all. They don't go to the net at all. They don't go along the wall at all. And these other teams, the Capitals and the Islanders, just grind them to death. And I can't even imagine what eight games against the Bruins are going to be like. But that's another thing that goes against them, style of play. They're used to playing Ottawa and Detroit and Florida and Montreal and the Leafs. And now they've gone to a completely different brand of hockey, and they just can't do it.
Yeah, I watched Washington and Philadelphia play that two-game set this week, and it was really competitive, hard hockey. Even when the score got a little bit out of control, it was still heavy scrum, go to the net hard, five, six guys around the net. You can cover half the guys on the ice with a blanket. It's really good.
I know nobody up there wants to hear it, but if the Leafs get to the Final Four and they see Washington or Boston or one of these teams, it's going to be a whole different world for those guys.
Listen, Mike, I'll tell you what, I'm not sure, and Leaf fans aren't going to want to hear this either. I'm not sure they can get out of this division. I really am not. The Winnipeg Jets are, you know what, they're a bigger club. They might be deeper, and they have better goaltending.
Yeah.
So what do you need? What do you need in playoffs? You need to be heavy, you need to have depth, and you need to have great goaltending. Well, you know what? That right at this point, based on what I saw the last two nights here in Toronto, that might be the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, I acknowledge they're pretty good, but let's be honest. The Toronto Maple Leafs did beat them last night, albeit in overtime, and outplayed them by a country mile in the second game. So I don't know. I don't know who the better team is, but I don't think it's necessarily Winnipeg based.
No, but my point is, Bob, is we shouldn't be giving the Maple Leafs a free path to three rounds.
I'm not. I you know, we can get into that when we come. We're going to take the break. We're going to come back more. Mike Harrington, Darren Millard with us today. Bob McCown, John Shannon, Darren Millard, Mike Harrington with us. We spent a good deal of time dealing with the trials and tribulations in the first segment of the Buffalo Sabres. The trials and tribulations of the Vegas Golden Knights are not nearly as severe. In fact, overall, playing pretty well. Millard, is management, is the team, is the fan base, are you satisfied with what you've seen?
Yeah, it's been really good. They've lost a couple of games in Minnesota, where they always have trouble scoring, but they managed to break through and make a game of it in the second game. But no, first place, and they've had a couple of little hiccups with COVID and some injury issues at times, and they've managed to get through that, and they're holding on to top spot, best points percentage in the division. They're challenging for the best points percentage in the league right now, and they have a resurgent Marc-Andre Fleury, who's arguably playing the best hockey of his life, and that's made a big difference with Robin Leonard out with an upper body injury. So it's been really good. They have a face of the team in Fleury. They have the face of the franchise up front in Mark Stone, and both have played equally to their potential.
It's just so intriguing as we look back last off season, which wasn't that long ago and didn't last that long. Lots of talk about Fleury's future. Mm-hmm. And I think my sense, Darren, always was that Fleury was kind of the guy in Vegas, kind of the pivotal, the start of the franchise, and that a lot of fans didn't want to see him usurped from his role. And there was a lot of talk about whether he was going to get traded or not. And now here he is through circumstance, being Marc-Andre Fleury again, huh?
Absolutely. Well, he did lose his job in the bubble. They went with Robin Leonard, and that was not a mistake based on Robin Leonard's play. He was very, very good, and they didn't lose because of goaltending. So you have to give credit to Pete DeBoer on that. When they came back for training camp, they alternated, and Fleury was the better goaltender of the two stats-wise when they were flipping back and forth. And when Leonard went out, Marc-Andre Fleury's numbers and play improved. He started 10 straight games, and it was vintage Fleury. He's changed his game. He has. He's much more conservative than he used to be. Plays more in the blue ice and has been able to adjust. And whether you want to call it a chip on his shoulder, whether you want to call it proving people wrong, or just having fun and knowing that he's at the tail end of his career, which he's admitted himself, he's got 2 years left on his deal. It's been arguably the most impressive performance individually in the league. And the first score, but this guy doing what he's doing at 36 years old, putting himself in a Vezina conversation is like out of left field.
Hey, putting himself in an Olympic conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I argue that Gary Lawless, who I work with here, brought that up maybe about the game 7-8 mark. And I said, Gary, it's a year away. And like, let's get into the season a little bit. Well, Gary's right. It's it's a consideration right now, the way he's playing. And the Olympic general manager just happens to be a general manager inside the West Division. So in this world of seeing everybody a whole bunch of times, he's seeing him a whole bunch of times.
You know, what's the most impressive thing to me about the Vegas Golden Knights is I covered that Stanley Cup final in 2018. And you just felt like it was a magic carpet ride. And you couldn't believe it. It was a once in a lifetime thing. And then you're going to see how things are going to advance from there. The biggest thing to me is they have been able to deal with expectations. They've been able to keep their window open. They've been able to evolve, bring in guys like Pacioretty and Stone and Pietrangelo. And they have been a contender every single year. And that, to me, might be a bigger accomplishment than just the magic carpet ride of getting to the Stanley Cup final, because it is not a one-hit wonder. They have been built for the long haul right out of the gate. It's pretty amazing.
And that includes changing coaches.
Right.
You know, so the evolution and being trying to be what I guess I would describe it as being proactive to what the system has created for you, I think something that both McCrimmon and McPhee probably deserve some credit for.
And changed over the roster on the back end significantly. Schmidt is out. Pietrangelo is in. You upgraded on that part of it, but obviously had to move out what was a fan favorite here. But the kids, like Dylan Coghlan scores his first career hat trick the other day. He wasn't in the opening day lineup this year. He's up because of injury. He's made a contribution. Zach Whitecloud has become a full-time National Hockey League. These aren't the sexiest names. Nick Hegg as a full-time National Hockey Leaguer. They've been able to play three kids on the back end on a regular basis and still win hockey games.
And none of those guys played in Brandon. It's amazing. Sorry. I couldn't resist because it's that Brandon Las Vegas pipeline that Kelly's created. I mean, hey, the new backup goalie, where did he play junior hockey?
That sweater right there is Chris Osgood's Brandon Wheking sweater.
Okay. Right there. Well, Chris Osgood doesn't play for you for Vegas. No. So.
I just wanted to complete the Brandon circle and the Brandon thread.
Well, I'm kind of listening to this thread, and here's what I'm wondering. When you think of the greatest expansion franchises in sports, any sport, and I think Harrington, you made mention of this. I mean, the first year you were there, I was there. I was there at, I think, game 2 in Vegas. And that one year seemed like magical, but now we understand the foundation that was built and the changes that have been made. You've had success, success, success in 3 years. Not finished three, but through that time. When you think about the model expansion franchises historically, I remember the Kansas City Royals won, I think they won a World Series in 8 years, if I'm not mistaken. And they were, considered one of the great expansion franchises. And the Toronto Blue Jays weren't quite as good, but they won 2. Is there anybody else in the conversation? Sorry.
The Buffalo Sabres were a great expansion franchise.
They were.
They were in the playoffs in year 3. They were in the Stanley Cup final in year 5. They were basically in the playoffs almost every year in the 70s and 80s, the first 20 years of their existence, which is one of the problems.
You're right. You're right. But wouldn't you concede that the Golden Knights have usurped the Sabres?
The Golden Knights are just in a category all by themselves. I mean, they are the greatest expansion franchise to me in any of the four pro sports.
Yeah.
The league championship in year 1 and continue on here in year 2, 3, 4. It's just nobody can touch it.
And you know what? Building that foundation with that first year, it is reflected in the business of hockey in Nevada too. Believe it or not, with Mike in Buffalo and Darren in Vegas, we are talking to guys that are in the number 1 and number 3 regional television markets in the National Hockey League right now. Vegas and Buffalo and Pittsburgh is the other one, are the top 3 television markets in the United States when it comes to regional hockey.
And Darren, I think you could certainly vouch to this. To me, a real key was they got things rolling in Vegas before the Raiders kicked off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The stadium opened before the NFL came in and really maybe could have really put a foothold on things if the Golden Knights were a terrible team. Now it's a hockey town, and it's got an NFL team and can be a football town. It was real important for them, I think, to get started quickly, and they did it.
Interesting that you bring that up, because there was a promo the other day that was running on one of the local radio stations, and it said, well, I guess not all first-year franchises work out the way the Golden Knights do. And it was in reference to the Los Angeles Raiders and not being able to Las Vegas Raiders. And it's there's pressure on what's going to happen with the Raiders to try and turn this thing around.
You want pressure? How about Ron Francis? How much pressure is there in Seattle now, given what happened with the Vegas Golden Knights? That might be the toughest GM job in the league next year.
With the same rules and regulations.
Can Seattle get to where the Golden Knights are in year four? Like, never mind year one, but then try to get to where they are right now in year four. That's a challenge, too.
What impact, if any, have the Raiders had? Or can you even judge that given the COVID situation?
What's your sense when you walk
around in the marketplace? I mean, I haven't been there since the Raiders arrived. I know when I was there previously, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing the Golden Knights logo, sweaters, shirts, this, that, the other thing. It was everywhere, absolutely everywhere. Has that changed?
Yeah, I don't think that the Golden Knights are any less present. And you're right, it's one of the freakiest things, because you'd think that the Golden Knights had been here for 25 years, mm-hmm. with how present their logo, the license plates, the t-shirts, everything is. But the Raiders have a presence. It's certainly in the media and in the fan base. The one thing I will say is, like, the Raiders logo hasn't changed. So you see a t-shirt walking down the street, you go, is that a Las Vegas t-shirt? Is that a fan base? So it's a little bit difficult to tell there, but there's been, you'd be crazy to say that it hasn't been a presence, and we'll see when fans start and they start to fill up that shiny new stadium. But I think Mike's right. This is a hockey town that has a National Football League team.
At the beginning of this year, I think it would be safe to say that in the West, it was supposed to be Vegas and Colorado kind of going toe to toe. Well, has that materialized, John? I mean, to a real extent?
Well, no. Colorado, they have had their injuries. Colorado's had some COVID issues. Colorado has sputtered at times. Minnesota has kind of evolved, particularly in the last 3 weeks, as a big team. I wouldn't discount the St. Louis Blues in all of this. LA's played well, but I don't think the three California teams are playoff teams, really. But to me, it's shifted to Vegas and Minnesota as the top two teams in the West. Is that fair, Darren?
Yeah, they're built the exact same, too. Mm-hmm. They're big, they're fast, they're deep. Minnesota is, I love what Billy Guerin did there. He almost took the Vegas model and replicated it, because he added so much speed to a team that was already pretty formidable with size, dynamic back end, and he completely changed the goaltending, and they're getting saves right now. Dean Evason's put a stamp on there with taking the room back, which there's been a few coaches that have gone through that right. system and haven't been able to take that room or been allowed to take that room.
And he did it with one thing, right? He did it with one thing.
He sat out Zach Parise.
Right.
And that, I think, will give him a lot of credibility or strength or improve his voice during the back half of the season. And Kaprizov is as dynamic player as they've ever had in their franchise.
Added goaltending, added speed. You got the room back by sitting out a top player. None of this stuff worked in Buffalo. They haven't done it. It hasn't worked. You're right, though. Billy Garrett's done the job in Minnesota with all these things. It's just another example of how screwy the Sabres are.
Well, and they could have hired Billy Guerin rather than Jason Botterill.
Sure.
And they traded, and Minnesota made a trade with Buffalo of a couple of high-profile players. And
which Buffalo thought was a good trade, but Eric Staal,
which I did too.
And I'm not going to say anything negative about Eric Staal. He's been really good in the room. he's in Buffalo. He didn't want to be in Buffalo. He wanted to be in Minnesota. His wife and kids aren't here. You can imagine what the poor guy's going through. And now at least, and the Sabres are going to do Eric Staal a solid too. They're going to trade him to a team going for it because they appreciate what he's done. And they just know. I mean, Eric Staal's the first guy who's going to be out of here, whether it's a Canadian team, whether maybe it's back to Carolina. But that was a good deal that Kevin Adams made. Marcus Johansson's not a center. The Sabres got a second line center. They could keep Dylan Cousins out of the middle. But, you know, Eric Staal's probably sitting there going, man, I cannot believe I'm not in Minnesota this year and I'm in the middle of this.
Minnesota has put themselves in the mix. Mm-hmm. And one thing that they do have is they've got some wacky, you talk about matchups earlier in the show. They've controlled Vegas inside their own rink. Right. Over the course of the years. So there's some psychological play there over the years. If they ever met in the playoffs, that will be a major storyline.
Well, you know, the one guy that every time I watch them, I can't stop watching, and that's Jordan Greenway. This mm-hmm. guy is, oh man, he's
We've been waiting for him to emerge.
Yes, yeah. We have. And whether it's the change in coach and that's not a knock at Bruce, cause we like Bruce. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, talk about using his body. Talk about using his, you know, he's got great hand eye. This guy is going to be, if he's not already, he's going to be a star in this league for a long, long time.
The impressive part about him is he can get there.
Yeah.
Like he's a big body. He's fierce. He's competitive. And the question always with those guys is, can they get there? Can they get to the puck? Can they get to the battle? And he can get there.
Yeah. And we saw him at the World Juniors a few years back thinking that this guy's going to be a star. And then, you know, whether it was change in management, but this team was pretty patient with him and it's finally paying off, and it's paying off in so many ways for what Guerin and Evason have done with that club.
I'm intrigued by this conversation, the mention of Bruce Boudreau, the former coach at Minnesota, who was fired, and the team obviously has evolved since then. And I'm not really concerned that much about whether Gabby was the wrong guy there or, you know, obviously things didn't work out in one way or the other. I'm wondering more about, because his name pops up every now and again when you're contemplating a coaching change. He would be, you know, probably in the top three guys of most likely candidates if some coach was fired. I don't know whether you all agree with that, but it's,
sure. His problem is what? He can't win game seven. That wouldn't be a problem in Buffalo. People just want to get to game one here.
Yeah. I think certainly if you're putting a list together of people who are going to get a chance to coach in the National Hockey League again, I think Bruce is on that list.
Yeah.
I think he has to be.
But here's my point, guys. When a coach leaves, in this case fired, well, most coaches are fired. That's usually how they leave. And then the team plays noticeably better after that coach leaves. Does it reflect badly on that coach? And does it mean they are less likely to get another opportunity?
No. Julien. The Canadians have been better after the first couple of games. They've been better since Claude Julien's been out.
He's on the list too, right?
Yeah, he's on the list. I mean, I just think sometimes the coach's voice runs out of pull. Players need to hear a new voice. It doesn't reflect negative. Look at Boudreau, how many times he's been fired. Washington, Anaheim, Minnesota. He won a lot, but eventually your shelf life expires. And I don't think it's a reflection. I think people just judge the guy by what he can do. And that's why you have he's recycled. Well, maybe he's recycled because he's pretty good. Maybe a lot of the guys the Sabres have fired haven't been rehired because they haven't been any good. So I don't look at it too much as a negative. If the Sabres announce tomorrow Bruce Boudreau is the coach, people are like, okay, this guy's won a lot. Let's go. So, you know, I just think shelf life is a big thing with coaches.
Hmm. Millard, any thoughts?
I absolutely agree. I don't think that Gerard Gallant's a bad coach at all, but they needed a different approach and a different voice in with that group at the time. I don't think that Claude Julien is a bad coach at all. And I like Bruce Boudreau. I like the way he approaches the game. I like his competitiveness. I think he does push people and he plays with an offensive style. So a lot of times if a coach gets fired, I think if you're going to point the finger and say it's a reflection of the coach, you have to look at how long that coach was in the job first before you say cast aspersions on whether or not he was doing a poor job or the voice ran out.
Well, I mean, look, when you look at Julian, Boudreau, Gallant, I think you have to put Mike Babcock on that list at some point. I'm not sure whether it's now, but he'll be on that list at some point. And then, don't be surprised if we started hearing at a certain point a guy like Ken Hitchcock's name again at a certain point for a short-term fix. And then
he retired.
Which time? we're now in Daryl Sutter in Calgary. Talking to people last night in Calgary, they said, oh, yeah, we did see a difference with the way the team played. It was a simpler game. It was a north-south game. And they were doing Daryl Sutter stuff already. The problem was, to Mike's point, is there were a couple of key players in these rooms and in Calgary particularly that were stopped listening to the previous coach, just weren't paying attention to what he was saying. And the only way you can... when you got a guy on a 7-year contract making $7 million, the only way you can punish him is by changing the coaching philosophy or putting him in the press box. Well, you can't put him in the press box because it looks bad on you because you signed him to the contract. So you have to do something. And then, changing the editorial control of what's behind the bench is the easiest way to do it.
This year, you can't put him in the press box anyway. We're on different tiers.
No, that's right.
Jeremy Colleton. Like there was whispers a year ago that was not happening or working out. And now it's one of the great stories in the National Hockey League. So it's also who decides to have patience and who doesn't.
And he's done it in Chicago without Jonathan Taves. Yeah. Without Jonathan Taves.
And Kirby Doc.
And Kirby Doc. Ooh, although Doc's skating again. So it looks like he's back sooner than later.
Guys, always interesting and fascinating. We're not quite at a point yet. I had to hold myself back and ask you who you thought might be the final four teams in the playoffs, but we'll have time to address that. We're not.
I can tell you who's not going to be there.
Oh, way to be a riverboat gambler.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we know.
I don't know where he is on my screen, on your screen, but Mike, I'm going with your team.
Remember, the historical stat for this year, guys, the Sabres miss the playoffs like they will. They will tie the all-time NHL record with 10 straight playoff misses. Pretty embarrassing, I'd say.
Well, St. Louis, halfway through the year a couple of years ago, had the big rebound. Any chance of that repeating itself in Buffalo?
No. There's no Jordan Binnington.
Definitive statement from a definitive guy.
There's no Gloria coming. There's no all those things happen in the same season for the St. Louis Blues. No.
It's always fun, boys. Thank you so much. Mike Harrington in Buffalo, Darren Millard in Las Vegas. We'll bug you again down the road. Thanks, boys. Be well.
You too.
John and I will be back after this message. McCowan, John Shannon, back to wrap things up. Well, I didn't want to ask the boys who they thought were the four teams most likely to make the final four, if you will, which would be more intriguing now because sort of like, remember the old days of the World Series where the American League never played the National League team and you had no level of comparison? You kind of got that this year, and you probably, this is the only year you'll have that. But
yeah, that's part of the problem. But it also brings up another thing. I think the NHL should consider changing how they do awards, because I think there should be a nominee coming out of each division for awards, like four defensemen, four rookies of the year, before we decide who it is. Because I'm not sure, because of the level of competition is so different. Yeah. Well, I think you have to do one for each.
Here's the dilemma with that. I mean, in theory, that sounds okay. The dilemma with that is the two best rookies are both in the same division.
Well, but
clearly the two best rookies happen to be in the same division, but only one of them is going to come out. And the second best rookie is going to be fifth, which is off the board.
I would argue that could be an issue with the way the alignment is. The two best teams in hockey could be in the same division.
Well, yeah, but why create that? That's harder to do than just,
I guess. I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas, Bob. It's my Friday idea. It was my idea.
I mean, I'll tell you the one thing. I thought you were going to go down this road that I've been on forever. I don't understand why most, if not all, of the voting for best this, best that ends after 82 games.
Well, because that's the level playing field, because not everybody makes the playoffs. Because the best rookie could be on the Detroit Red Wings, and they're not going to make the playoffs.
I don't care.
And
the regular season is of no consequence.
He needs to get measured.
The playoffs are where there's consequence. If you're going to have 82 games and then play another 20 or 30, include it.
Awards. One of the reasons awards exist is to try to create relevance for the regular season. You know, you think it's one?
It's not possible.
Of course it is. Well, it is not for you.
It's not for me.
I know.
It's just something to do on a Tuesday night.
And a Wednesday and three Thursdays.
Thank you. Which this week all happened in 1 week. That's it for this edition of the program.
Hey, John Paul Morosi. John Paul Morosi on Monday.
On Monday, some baseball talk for Shannon McCowan. Bye-bye.